It's good to see everyone here this morning. If you're following along, we're going to be in the book of James in chapter 3. There was bad weather one time when the airlines were trying to fly around the country and it was backing up a lot of flights. As a result, a lot of planes wound up sitting on the runway for hours and hours waiting to take off. And on one plane, all the attempts to please the customers or try to calm them down or their frustrations just wasn't working. And the pilot came on the intercom again and he said, "Folks, we'll be getting permission to take off, but I have to tell you that we're 26th in line for departure." So they had a long time before they left. So you can hear that everyone on the plane give out a groan. A flight attendant took the mic and added, "Ladies and gentlemen, please close your window shades. We'll soon be showing our almost in-flight movie, Anger Management." And we've all heard of the JetBlue flight attendant who flipped out on the flight and insulted all the passengers, grabbed a couple of beers and popped the chute out the side of the plane, slid down it and went on his merry way for a while before he was arrested. You know, our tongue can get us into a lot of trouble sometimes. In fact, in chapter 3, we're going to see that it's possibly the hardest thing to tame in a person. James warns his readers that his readers should aspire to the office of teacher. That if they do that, that they need to be bridled in their tongue because they're going to be held at a higher standard than everyone else. Of course, when he talks about teachers, he means those who want to do that within the church. They want a position to teach because of the respect that comes with the office. However, James warns them about the stricter standards that God uses to judge teacher. He says, "If you teach a young one in the wrong ways, it's better that a millstone be hung around your neck and you be thrown into the water and drown." We have a great responsibility as Christians, and especially as teachers also, to be able to control our behavior and those type of things out there. And one of those behaviors is, of course, the tongue. Now, James doesn't imply that one ought to be perfect to be a teacher. He says we're all stubble. In fact, he points out a very basic idea that most people have a problem with, and that's controlling their tongue. He suggests that if one can control the tongue, he would be a perfect person. I'm sure a lot of us have all wish we had took back words that we said, even if they were innocently, you know, out of ignorance or something like that, blurted out. We simply, the truth is that we cannot control the tongue like we'd like to. It's the hardest part. I believe that James is pointing out the obvious problem in the lives of the people there and the teachers within the church. And they were morally pure in many ways. And I doubt that they were doing bad things out there, immoral things or anything like that. In fact, they were probably very moral people. But somehow they had forgotten that God views sinful speech or in the same level as those other sins. Or even we know that if we think a sin, we've already sinned in our hearts. In other words, they thought that they could speak hatefully about other people or flippantly and say coarse things, that it would somehow not affect their spiritual walk. But they were very, very wrong. Now, before looking into James's description of the evils of the tongue, it would be prudent to point out that there is more in the Bible said about the sin of the tongue, the lips and the mouth, than any other sin. So, if we only fool ourselves if we say, "Well, you know, that's not a problem for me," or anything like that, we all have to have, you know, bridle that tongue sometimes or get a hold of it, you know, in some cases. So we need to always remember that that can be a sore point in our walk with God. Even people who have an appearance of righteousness have problems with what they say. Isaiah the prophet was convicted when he saw the vision of the Lord in Isaiah chapter 6. He declared that he was a man of unclean lips and that he lived among a people who had unclean lips. Does this mean that Isaiah cursed, lied, or demeaned others? Probably not. I think it relates to the death of the good King Uzziah, I think that the general mood of the public was to express the lack of faith in God that bordered on accusing God of injustice towards Uzziah. So people grumble. People gossip about those things. One way we sin is by expressing an utter despair of life circumstances. Then we begin to imply that somehow God is unfair. You know, life is unfair to me. You ever heard people say that? Said it yourself? Why is the world against me? Well, when we're actually saying those things as a Christian, we're actually saying, well, God, I'm not happy with the circumstances you've given me. And not all our circumstances are bright and rosy and sunny and all that and just the right temperature. Our circumstances are the circumstances that the world brings out to us because we accept God. We're challenged in that way. We're tested, tried, and tempered by the things that happen to us in life. Not all of them are good. So, God is not unfair. But God may be giving us a hard test at some point in our life. Gossip is probably one of the only sins that's allowed in a lot of churches across America. If someone stormed into the church, you know, fussing and cussing, as they might say, we would ask them to leave immediately. But we wouldn't have any trouble if people were talking about others in the church. Now, you know, kind of one of those things when I was younger is, what's gossip and what's just talking about things in life? Well, I think gossip is when you're spreading salacious things and bad things about people and things like that. You're not talking about, you know, a little Johnny got into college and stuff like that and his grades weren't as good as they should have been, but, you know, or he's doing some things and, you know, those kind of things. But to go out there and relish in the fact that as they might say, dishing the dirt or digging in the dirt or something like that, that's what gossip is. And in some places, in some churches, that goes on a lot, you know, on the bated breath. You know, not saying any of that is taking place here, but it does happen in a lot of places. We're commanded in Ephesians 4:25 to speak the truth with each other because we are members of one another. We're all members joined together in the church. So, gossip differentiated from just us talking about, you know, life and things that are happening with us. Now, three illustrations James uses to characterize how the tongue is small but has the ability to control things that are large. Let's read our text this morning. He starts off, "Not many of you should presume to be teachers, my brothers, because you know that we who teach will be judged more strictly. We all stumble in many ways. If anyone is never at fault in what he says, he is a perfect man, able to keep his whole body in check. When we put bits into the mouths of horses to make them obey us, we can turn the whole animal, or take ships as an example. Although they are so large and are driven by strong winds, they are steered by a very small rudder, wherever the pilot wants to go. Likewise," verse 5, "the tongue is a small part of the body, but it makes great boasts. Consider what a great forest is set on fire by a small spark." So, he gives them a warning, and he gives them some illustrations here. The first is that we control a lot of things. You know, he, of course, was relating to what he had back then. But you think of what we control nowadays, and how the small rudder on a plane turns it around, and all what they call the control surfaces makes it go up and down. There's a smaller parts on there. A small steering wheel in our car, you know, turns that car around. It turns very large vehicles out there. So the tongue in itself can be a very controlling part of us, and it can get us into trouble. Like a forest fire, like a small spark. You know, some of the forest fires that people lost lives and lots of damage was done, and people lost possessions, could be attributed to sparks out of the muffler of a vehicle or a motorcycle or an ATV or something like that out there. So a lot can happen from something so small, and James gives us that warning this morning. "The tongue also is a fire," verse 6, "a world of evil among the parts of the body. It corrupts the whole person, sets the whole course of his life on fire, and is itself set on fire by hell. So, that's quite a warning there. We need to be careful of the things we say and the things we do, because they lead us. They not only reveal the inner person sometimes in a heated moment, but they also lead us down those paths. When we grumble and groan about life, instead of relishing in what's good in life and know that God is making us and perfecting us better, then we're not leading the life. We're not, that tongue is leading us down the path of the glass is half empty instead of the glass is half full. We want to, as James is not really saying it here, but what he's really saying is, start thinking in those terms of my thoughts. You know, if a person gets depressed and they keep thinking those depressive thoughts, for, you know, sometimes they may take some action that's detrimental to them and their family. You know, if you keep talking bad about something, you're really going to believe it later on and do that. But if we start talking positively about things in our life, not looking at the glass half empty, but at the glass half full, that, you know, some of the bad things in our life has actually made us better Christians and strengthened us and gave us more wisdom in our lives and more fortitude, then we'll have a good perspective on those times and know that they were there to help us out and not lead us just into despair. So the tongue can be pretty crafty and get us into a whole lot of trouble. You know, our tongue is always ready to pour out words which poison relationships, harm others, and help destroy our own witness of Jesus Christ. What if you walk the walk of Christianity all your life and profess Christianity to people, and in a heated moment said some awful things, just flying off the handle? That would destroy everything that you worked for years to show these people what the grace of Christ and what His love for us can do. James points out the hypocrisy that comes about when we use the same tongue to praise the Lord and demean others. You know, it's the same tongue that we use to sing these songs here, to praise God, to pray for others. That same tongue can do some awful things. Let's read on. Verse 7 of our text, James 3. All kinds of animals, birds, reptiles, and creatures from the sea are being tamed and have been tamed by man, but no man can tame the tongue. It is a restless evil full of deadly poison. Now, James is not saying that some people have trouble controlling it. He says everyone does. So, and you know, the tongue is kind of attached to our mind. You know, we think it and we say it sometimes. Or we think it and, you know, we mean to say it. So, when James is talking about that, he's kind of talking about our mind, our thoughts at that same time. What proceeds out of our mouth. So we need to rid ourselves of that. We need to work towards that. He makes no light mention of the tongue as something that we need to control in our life. Now, he makes an illustration about the spring and the fig tree. And it's designed to remind the readers that the words which fall so easily from our mouth are demonstrations of what's really in our hearts. Let's read on. With the tongue we praise our Lord and Father, and with it we curse men who have been made in God's likeness. Out of the same mouth comes praise and cursing. My brothers, this should not be. Can both fresh water and salt water flow from the same spring? My brothers, can a fig tree bear olives or a grapevine bear figs? Neither can a salt spring produce fresh water. So he gives us this illustration. Good water is going to do good things. Bad water or salt water is going to do bad things. You're not going to have it the other way around. So what proceeds out of our mouth is what is at the heart of everything that we are. It reveals who we are in our lives. So, you know, if we're having trouble with our tongue when we're at work or driving down the road or anything like that, then we need to, in other words, take that temperature. And that's what James does a lot in the book of James when he was writing. He talked about, I'll show you my faith by my works. I'll tell you if I have a fever with a thermometer. And that's basically what he's doing. He's not replacing the grace and faith that we put in Jesus with works. But he's saying if you are a person of faith who accepts that grace, then you're going to do something in your life. And in that same way, our tongue tells the temperature of our minds. Whether we're hot and on fire for God and control it, or whether we're lukewarm or cold and let it say things, let things fall out of our head as they say, you know, that, that hurt people and demean God and everything. So he gives that illustration. Now he goes into two kinds of wisdom. Who is wise and understanding among you? Let him show it by his good life, by deeds done in humility that comes from wisdom. But if you harbor bitter envy and selfish ambition in your heart, do not boast about it or deny the truth. So he's not saying don't brag about how well you can, you know, say bad words or how well you can dress down another human being and make them feel, you know, lower than the earthworms in the dirt, anything like that. Don't boast about it. But don't deny it. Admit it and change. You know, every day when we sin, it's an opportunity to realize where we are with God. And that, you know, everyone does sin. But we can get better at not sinning quite so much in our lives. That's what's important. He goes on in verse 15 of chapter 3. Such wisdom does not come down from heaven, but is earthly, unspiritual, all of the devil. For where you have envy and selfish ambition, there you find disorder and every evil practice. If we're purely here to worship God in humility and spirit with love for each other, we're not going to have problems among us. We're not going to quarrel, fuss, and fight. We're not going to hear anyone say that this person said this and that about this other person and anything like that. But where there's selfish ambition, where there are people trying to get ahead just in the church to say they're this or that in the church, then you'll find these evil practices, as James says. But the wisdom that comes from heaven, first of all, is pure, then peace-loving, considerate, submissive, full of mercy and good fruit, impartial and sincere, peacemakers who sow in peace raise a harvest of righteousness. Now right there, from verse 17, he tells us what our temperature should be. We know ours should be 98.6. The birds out there, I think some of them 112, 114. You know, I think dogs have a high temperature. I mean, every animal has a high temperature out there. But he's telling us what we should, what our temperature should be. To me, this Bible here, it's like a ruler. And, you know, when we measure out a foot, we want it to be a foot. And if someone has, you know, has a ruler and it's a short ruler and he's selling us a foot and we're really just getting 11 inches of whatever we're buying, then we're cheated and we don't like that. But the Bible, where it says we should do something, that's our rule or our ruler for life. First of all, it's pure. We need to be pure, as he says. We need not have anything worldly in us. Any worldly ambition does not belong in church. Any worldly problems don't belong in the church. We need to purify our mind of the worldly things out there. Then, peace-loving. Do we love peace or do we like to be contentious? I don't know if you know people in your life like this, but I know people that they just love an argument. They'll take the opposite side just to have an argument. They'll relish in that, and I've seen them find somebody else who loves it, and they argue back and forth, and it's just a good old time with them. And I don't know, it just turns me off completely like that. You know, we should be peace-loving, seeking to get along with our not only ourselves in here, most importantly, but with man outside. Consider it. Do we consider the feelings of our brothers and sisters? When people out there gossip, they're not considerate of those other people. They're just going around either spreading truth that shouldn't be known by anybody else or spreading lies that have been perpetuated by other people. That should not be the Christian's way. Submissive. Always submissive to each other in our needs and everything. are we considerate in that way? That, you know, we want to be pleasing to our brothers and sisters. That we want them to have, you know, the best in their life. And that our, you know, things are not quite as important as theirs. But obeying God and Christ and what's been written down in this book, full of mercy. Not a lot of mercy out there in life. You know, people say, get yours before, you know, before it's all taken. People out there agree. You have those that say, do unto others before they do it to you. Well, they don't care about other people. But we should be full of mercy on ourselves, on our brothers and sisters, and on the world out there. Because everyone needs some mercy from time to time. And good fruit, impartial and sincere. We should bear, like that fruitful tree, we should bear that which produces, which gives back to those. We need to give back to each other in the love that the Christian should have. And we need to be impartial. Not favoring people, but loving all of God's children and everyone out there. And sincere. Make sure that we have no ulterior motives or anything like that. That we're sincere in the things we say and do in life. Peacemakers who sow in peace raise the harvest of righteousness. He closes out that chapter with that. That peacemakers are those who harvest righteousness. We shouldn't be seeking to destroy people or to lower people, but to elevate them and help them out in the needs that they may have in life. Our tongue demonstrates in our lives just how we really are. And if our tongue is unbridled and we can't control it today, then we need to realize that maybe we're not the Christian we think we are. Maybe we're not as righteous as we think we are. And maybe there's still some work to be done there. And even if we are doing pretty good, according to James, it can't be bridled. So we always need to hang on to the reins. It's like a horse that, you know, he's broken. But every once in a while, something takes over him and he takes off. And about the only way he's going to stop is when he gets to a fence. And of course, you're not going to stop at that time. And you're probably going to sail over that fence. But, you know, and then there are those horses that you can let anybody ride that are truly broken and, you know, won't get out of hand. But our tongue is like that first horse. And at any time, we need to be careful that it does not shame us or bring shame onto the church or anything like that. So, it's up to you and me to determine what's our temperature today according to our tongue and our mind and our thoughts and actions. I don't know what your condition is this morning, but if you have need of the church, won't you come as we stand and sing the song of invitation?